Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Six Fullerton police officers were involved in an altercation with a homeless Fullerton man, Kelly Thomas, who later died of the injuries he suffered in that encounter. The 10-minute-long beating has now led to criminal charges filed against two of those six officers. One of them, 10-year veteran of the force, Manuel Ramos, has been charged with second-degree murder and involuntary manslaughter. Corporal Jay Cicinelli, who's a 12-year veteran of the force and a former LAPD officer, is facing involuntary manslaughter and excessive force charges. When one looks at the history of prosecutions of police officers for misconduct that results in death, it's very difficult, it appears, to get a murder conviction, a rare event in California. And the man who's taking on that challenge is Orange County District Attorney Tony Rakakis, who joins us on Air Talk. Good morning, Mr. Rakakis.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Let's talk, first of all, about the challenge. With a charge as serious as second-degree murder, even though you've got a videotape, you've got serious injuries that were sustained prior to the death of Kelly Thomas, is this, in your view, a very tough challenge to take on in court?
Of course it is. You know, as you say, it's always a tough battle to convict a police officer of anything. But I can tell you that this is quite a departure from normal police conduct, and I think that the circumstances here justify the charges and a trial and a conviction.
Specifically, what will you have to prove to a jury about Mr. Ramos's intent in his confrontation with Kelly Thomas?
Well, what we're dealing with here is called implied malice, and that is that his state of mind was such that he intentionally did an act dangerous to human life without caring about that human life. And so here, when he put his fist in Kelly Thomas's face and said that he was going to F him up and created that situation that caused this whole altercation to start happening, and he knew that he would bring in for some other police officers and that Kelly Thomas would get hurt very badly, I think it's clear from the way it started and the way it proceeded throughout that he committed an act that was dangerous to human life, and then he really didn't care about the life of Kelly Thomas. And so I believe that we have a pretty strong case here.
Does that require that, for the sake of the jury being convinced of this charge, that you have to get inside the mind of Officer Ramos at the time? In other words, that you have to show that he had lost control, that his anger got the better of him? What is it that you have to show to prove that willful disregard for human life?
We don't really have to show getting into his mind. What we need to do is to demonstrate that based on all the facts and circumstances of this case that you can see, that the evidence demonstrates that he didn't care about Kelly Thomas's life. So it's inference based on the evidence. We don't really need to the officer say that he intended to kill or say that, you know, anything in particular. So it's just the evidence and what it shows.
Wouldn't you, though, to convince a jury, have to show something was different? Here's a guy, 10-year veteran of the force, who, at least what we know publicly, was not involved in the death of anyone else with whom he got into an altercation. So something different happened here. And what is it that you think happened, or what do you think that you'll be able to show a jury that made this different than any other encounter this officer has had?
Well, absolutely. Something terribly different happened here that is much different than any ordinary police encounter. Because what happened here was that he didn't just talk. He didn't just have a lawful detention. There was a lawful detention to begin with, but then he changed all that when he put latex gloves on and put his fist in Kelly Thomas's face and told Kelly Thomas that he was going to F him up. In other words, he put into Kelly Thomas's mind that this was not an ordinary police encounter. This was going to be a beating at the hands of a angry and menacing police officer. And then he proceeded to start the physical force.
But what do you think led to such a different encounter than presumably this officer has had previously in his career? Why that night? Why would this person? Why did this happen?
Well, you know, I don't know why it happened. I don't know why the officer became so angry, but he did. And it was very clear that he was giving instructions to Kelly Thomas. Kelly Thomas was having some difficult time following those instructions, and the officer became very angry and announced that he was going to bring this terrible violence on him and then proceeded to do it. So I think that's what we need to show.
Did the four other non-charged police officers strike Mr. Thomas during this 10-minute beating?
In some ways they did, but not those were more, other than Cicinelli, those were more attempts to move him, to get him under control, to keep him pinned to the ground, things of that nature. And but with respect to the other police officers, you have to understand that coming from their point of view, they did not know of or join in Officer Ramos's unlawful conduct. They came at a later time, and what they would see was a police officer or two police officers struggling to try to get this person who's resisting under control. And their job at that point becomes to assist their fellow police officer to make this arrest. So they're entitled to use a reasonable force to do that. And from their point of view, and I don't think that there's anything that they did. And by the way, they used a lot of force and they put a lot of weight. And what they did here was very heavy conduct. But I don't think that what they did that we would be able to sustain criminal charges against the other four, with the exception of except for Cicinelli.
With the bruises that we saw on Kelly Thomas's face from that hospital photo, were all of those bruises essentially the result of the two men are being criminally charged, or do you think that any of the restraining or other physical contact from the other four officers would have been partly responsible for the bruising?
Can't really say exactly which injury was the result of which blow or which officer necessarily caused which injury, except for some of the injuries to the face that were caused by Officer Cicinelli. But I tell you that Officer Ramos is responsible for all of that because he is the one who started it, and he's the one who knowingly called in the force to help him to get Kelly Thomas under control and to essentially punish Kelly Thomas and beat him up.
Mr. Rakakis, what about in this case, all the public discord, all the protests against the city of Fullerton? This is a very politicized case as well, with a tremendous amount of public passion. If the defense moves for a change of venue in this trial, is that something you would fight?
Well, I don't know. I guess we'd have to cross that bridge when we come to it. I really, frankly, don't believe that the defense would be able to find a better venue than Orange County to defend a police officer.
How damning, in your view, is the video that the public has not yet seen, but which you used for your investigation?
I missed the first part of your question.
How damning is the video? I assume that this video the public has not yet seen was one of the big investigative tools you used in filing these charges. How
Yes.
compelling is that video? How influential do you think it will be on the jury?
Well, it's the evidence. The video the video depicts what took place. That in combination with the digital auto recorders that the police officers were wearing tells us the story, because you can see what was going on in the video for the most part, and you can listen to the conversations, and you can hear what Officer Ramos said to Kelly Thomas, and you can see how he was standing over him and menacing him and putting his fist in his face and the things that he said to him.
I thank you, Mr. Rakakis. Very much appreciate your being with us and talking about your decision to file criminal charges against two of the Fullerton officers.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony Rakakis, Orange County District Attorney. It's also my pleasure to be joined by Lori Levinson, professor at Loyola Law School, former federal prosecutor and expert on criminal prosecutions. Professor Levinson, great to have you with us again.
Good to be with you.
How difficult a challenge will this be for the DA's office?
I think this will be a very tough case for the DA's office, especially in the murder charge against Officer Ramos. I mean, in the past, jurors are very reluctant to police officers. They realize police officers have a tough job. They see people on the street. These people are unpredictable. And even when we see terrible things on videotapes, you don't necessarily get convictions. So if we go by history, this is a tough case for the prosecutors to bring.
We heard Mr. Rakakis say he doesn't feel he has to get inside the mind of the officer as to, you know, what caused him allegedly to snap on that night. But do you think from a jury perspective, there has to be some explanation for his conduct?
I do differ with him on that, and because I believe you're right. I think the jurors are going to be asking those tough questions. Why would an officer who's been on the force for 10 years, we don't know his record, but presumably he hasn't done anything like this, why is he doing it now? Now, legally, I want to be clear, they don't have to prove the why, but the jurors do have to find that he had in his mind this conscious disregard for the victim's life. And so they will start asking these questions. Why on this time does he have this conscious disregard when he's never had it before?
Lori Levinson, Loyola Law School professor with us on Air Talk. Do you anticipate a change of venue will be requested because of the emotional and political furor around the case?
Well, on that one, I think that DA Rakakis is right. I mean, traditionally, a very good place to try a case, one that supports the police officers, would be right there in Fullerton, right there in Orange County. But you'd have to sort of screen this jury very carefully to find out what's going on in their minds, because I think this has been a polarizing case. You're going to have people who say that the Fullerton police have been out of control. They finally got caught. We need to bring justice. And on the other hand, we're going to have people who say, you know, we support the police and that this prosecution goes too far. So it'll be really a very difficult challenge to find that jury. I'm not sure that you're automatically going to get a change of venue.
And finally, if there are other complaints against both of these officers, can they be introduced to the jury, or are those excluded from the trial on these charges?
The answer is possibly. It depends on what the nature of the prior complaints are, what the evidence was. We have a doctrine called prior similar acts, but we don't know of any of those yet. So we're going to have to see how that shakes out in the evidence. You know, they've brought the murder charge and they've brought the involuntary manslaughter charge. I think the likelihood is much higher on an involuntary manslaughter charge. But even on that, I would caution, there is going to be so much more brought out at trial, even more than the video or what we've heard so far.
Professor Levinson, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Lori Levinson, Loyola Law School professor. And just a couple minutes away, we'll talk with civil rights attorney John Burton, who represents plaintiffs in civil police misconduct cases, and talk about how this is apt to play out in the courtroom. It's Air Talk on KPCC. Now, Hedy Lynn Hurtis has the news. Air Talk, I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us as we talk about the beating case of Kelly Thomas, homeless man suffering from schizophrenia, who was beaten by police officers in an encounter on July 5th. Just a few days later, he was taken off life support. His father took up his son's cause before the Fullerton City Council with members of news media protesting the police action. Numerous investigations were launched. Michael Giannacco, who is the overseer of the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, is doing an in-house investigation for Fullerton PD. The FBI is looking into possible civil rights violations of Kelly Thomas, and we've just heard Orange County District Attorney Tony Rakakis, announced the charges yesterday against two of the six police officers involved in the event. I welcome your calls with your questions or comments about the prosecution and where the case stands. We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or the Air Talk page at kpcc.org, where Rory in Long Beach writes, I find it difficult to believe the four officers holding down and moving Kelly Thomas acted appropriately. It's their job to protect and serve. They should have prevented their colleagues from beating a homeless man to death. While the DA doesn't believe he could get a conviction against them, all of the police officers should be fired. Now, the six continue on paid administrative leave pending what's going on with the other investigations, the internal one at the department and the federal one through the FBI. We're at 866-893- KPCC. Joining me is John Burton, civil rights attorney, represents plaintiffs in civil police misconduct cases, also a former state legislator. Mr. Burton, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry, except for I'm a different John Burton.
Oh, you are? Okay. Oh, all right. I was given wrong information. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. We've been
I thought it's interesting
before.
You'd be in Pasadena because the other John Burton's based in Northern California. But okay. So anyway, let's talk about this particular case. I assume you've been following it closely. What about this case is particularly challenging in a courtroom?
Well, actually, it's particularly easy because of the quality of the evidence. These sort of sudden in custody deaths happen all the time. I would say there's at least one a week somewhere in the United States where police use overly aggressive tactics during an arrest that results in someone dying, perhaps with the taser and perhaps with other tactics. This one, I commend the district attorney for filing these charges and the father for pressing the case. Is almost an exception that proves a rule that these cases are not prosecuted.
And so, but there's still going to be that challenge of jurors who see policing as an inherently very difficult job, one where their lives are at risk. And is the defense attorneys are going to make the case that the suspect was noncompliant, requiring the officers to restrain him? What is the prosecution going to have to say to overcome that?
Well, I don't understand why you would even raise the fact that any officer's safety was in danger in this incident. You had six well-trained, well-armed officers over with a schizophrenic who was unarmed, and they beat him to death. And I hear you saying things and with Professor Levinson saying things like, well, maybe why hasn't this guy done it before? I've never heard a bank robber go in and say in defense of himself, well, there's a whole bunch of banks I didn't rob. So there's a double standard at play, and it's throughout the media. And yes, there are jurors who reflect that double standard, but hopefully with good jury selection and good trial tactics, they'll cut through that and get a conviction if that's what's warranted in this case. And the evidence seems pretty strong on that regard.
But maybe the analogy would be the guy who's been employed for a continuing period of time, had the means to support himself, and then is the one who's said to have knocked off the bank. And so then the question is, well, you know, why would a guy who's got a means of support, you know, why would he knock off? If there's a track record there, what leads the person to act differently? So, I mean, I think for jurors, this is going to be an issue that's going to come up. Presumably this officer has had many, many encounters with noncompliant suspects. So then the question is, what happened here?
Well, that's not a defense to a crime. A guy who murders his wife and says, look, I've been living here with her for 25 years and I haven't raised a finger, is not going to get sympathy. That's not a defense to a criminal act that you didn't do it on other occasions. This is a double standard that you are pulling out of thin air for police officers. And that's one of the problems, is that police officers have benefited from a double standard for a long time, which has given officers like Ramos the idea that they can get away with conduct like this and nothing's going to happen to them. And nothing would have happened to them if it wasn't for the efforts of Mr. Thomas's father and his lawyer who campaigned to bring this to public attention and bring the sort of pressure that led to these charges being filed.
So how common do you see these incidents being, perhaps not leading to the death of the suspect, but serious beatings by police officers where there isn't anyone to stand up on behalf of the person who's been beaten?
Well, they're very common, and there are often people who stand up, but for different reasons, they don't create the same sort of political pressure, or they don't have the same quality of evidence and proof that existed in this case. I've settled two this year of schizophrenics who were killed by police officers. In each case, the police department paid seven-figure settlements, and in both cases, there were no criminal charges filed. So that is what we normally see.
Let's take a call from Sophie in Calabasas. You're on Air Talk.
Hi, I just wanted to say that what the DA was saying earlier about juries having difficulty convicting police officers, you know, we saw with the Oscar Grant case a few years ago up in Oakland, they moved the trial down to Los Angeles, and he was acquitted of his second-degree murder charge, but still found guilty of the involuntary manslaughter. But in that case, we also had video evidence. And, I think a lot of people would say that maybe the officer involved didn't receive the punishment that he deserved for what he did.
I think that was a prime example, though, where the jury was really faced with the issue of what was going on in the officer's head, because he claimed that he thought he was pulling his stun gun, not a service revolver or service weapon, when he fired on Oscar Grant. So, I mean, there's a case where the jury's trying to figure out, well, which is it? Was the guy honestly confused, or is that not plausible given how different those two devices feel? Mr. Burton, your thoughts on that?
Well, the Oscar Grant case involved a very particular sort of situation. And while I felt that a murder conviction would have been appropriate, you know, the jury came to its conclusion, which was still a conviction, which is an important achievement. This case, the evidence that was outlined by the district attorney yesterday about intent and malice is of a completely different order, where he threatened him. The guy was pinned down by other officers, and he was killed with blunt force trauma to the head and chest compressions. So the level of malice and intent is shown by the evidence is much stronger.
Let's see with David in Valley Village. You're on Air Talk.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There are two things that bother me. First of all, schizophrenic paranoia can be very violent, even if they have no weapons. They can be that strong. Number two, there's no video that shows the confrontation when it began to the end. You see snippets, and I think that's the problem in this case. There's nothing that shows the whole incident. So we don't know how Mr. Thomas really was. We don't know if he was confrontational and used a lot of force against the officers, do we?
Well, there was an audio tape that the different officers had that was audio recording the whole encounter, as we understand, from Mr. Rakakis. Additionally, there's a video that's not been publicly released that apparently provides more visual evidence of what happened on the scene. Mr. Burton?
Well, I would say that, again, we should wait until the evidence is presented at trial to draw the kind of conclusions that this caller is raising. I'm just talking about what was outlined by the district attorney at the news conference, and it certainly would support a murder conviction, and that would be appropriate if somebody was doing it in a uniform or not wearing a uniform. And I just think there should not be a double standard.
All right. I appreciate it. Let's talk with Ray in Newport Beach. Time for our final caller. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I wanted to echo everything Ms. Burton's saying, is that, yes, there absolutely is a double standard, and there's this unwarranted sympathy that a typical American jury finds for police officers who are being tried for brutality. And ultimately, it's the jurors, presumably the local taxpayers, who end up picking up the settlement tab when the same police officers are acquitted in the criminal court but found guilty in the civil court. And that disconnect has never made sense to me. And I also want to say that it saddens me that in 2011 America, we have to live with this inherent fear of police officers. This is not Syria. This is not Pakistan. And, you know, these are paid servants who are supposed to protect us and not terrorize us.
Well, I think, though, the fact that you have jurors who, by most accounts, are sympathetic to law enforcement indicates that most people do not live in fear of police, despite negative encounters people have with law enforcement officers. Many of us have had pretty nasty experiences with law enforcement, and yet you still have with jurors, as we've heard from both sides of this, a real challenge when it comes to prosecuting officers on the most serious charges. One thing that's different, I think, in this case, you have a particularly sympathetic victim here in Kelly Thomas. And I think that, the fact of his mental illness, calling out for his father, the way it was depicted, at least by the district attorney and by some ear witnesses to the event, that may well play very strongly on the jury. John Burton, final comment from you, sir.
Well, I think that the sympathy of jurors for police officers is maybe being a little bit exaggerated here. I couldn't be in business if that were actually the case, because I depend on winning civil cases and convincing jurors that the officers engaged in misconduct of different sorts. And I think that I'd like this caller to be on my next jury and not the caller before him. But there's a big variation among people. And I think more and more people are coming to the realization that police officers do, you know, not all of them, but many of them do exceed their bounds and need to be reined in through our criminal justice and our civil justice system. Thank you.
Thank you. John Burton, civil rights attorney, represents plaintiffs in civil police misconduct cases with the law offices John Burton in Pasadena. With us on Air Talk, share your comments about the prosecution of the two officers in the case of Kelly Thomas's beating death. 866, the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Please share your comments there. Aaron in Anaheim says police should be held to a stricter standard of responsibility. Why should it be harder to prosecute them? David in Venice said he had a successful lawsuit, civil lawsuit against campus police at UCLA, and police need to be held accountable. Michael in Paris says, regardless of Thomas's mental illness, Ramos made his intent clear that he planned to do bodily harm. No excuse. Again, the Air Talk page, kpcc.org.